What matters most to you? Where do you feel your actions, thoughts, and feelings are centered on? Is there someone you know who struggles with self-worth? Maybe you struggle with it yourself. What things or people do you draw upon for your sense of worthiness? In this episode, these are a few things that we address. If you're ready to gain a deeper understanding of where you draw your self-worth and learn how to change how you view your own worthiness, we'd like to welcome you to this episode of You Already Are. Hello and welcome to You Already Are. I am your host, Alyssa Carlson, and this is my co-host,
Michael Gardner. Hello again.
Hello again, and we are excited to be here. We've got a topic today that I think is really important for a lot of women in our current day. I mean, it's probably something important for men as well, but women, I think, struggle a lot with self-worth.
Men do too.
And where it's placed. And where it's placed, right? I read a book. It was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And there's a whole segment on where we place our center, like where are we placing our worth, or basically where we derive all of our actions from, where is it coming from? And he talks about there's a lot of different places that could come from. So like you have like spouse centered. So all your value is deriving from your spouse. And if they don't like something that you do, you're worthless. Or if they love something that you do, you're the best thing ever. Or if they don't have enough time for you, your life is pitiful. I will tell you, for years, most of my marriage, I have been spouse-centered. Everything that I was and am was attached to Remington, which is a lot of pressure to give to another person. And not just pressure, but a lot of power to give to another person. It's just like, oh, well, if he thinks I'm great, then I must be. Right? So there's the spouse-centered, there's self-centered. And I think we've talked about this before and the difference of being selfish versus self-centered. In this book, it was mostly talking about like selfishness, like just only caring about yourself, not seeing what other people have to offer and putting yourself in a victim mindset type of thing.
A narcissist, basically. Yep.
There's another one that was activity-centered or excitement-centered. So you're kind of like a thrill seeker. So the only time you feel alive is when you do something exciting, you know, and if you're not doing something exciting all the time, then you're worthless, right? There's money-centered. So you're only worth something if you have money. These are all different centers that we tend to derive a lot of our actions from. And in fact, I am going to grab the book so that I can look at the rest of it. And what are the chances I flipped to the page that I needed like almost immediately? Family-centered is another one of them. You would think that family-centered is a good thing, but he talks about there's 4 different things that we derive from wherever we place our center. And it's security, guidance, wisdom, and power. So those are all the things that stem from whatever center you're choosing to base yourself on. And the family-centered is founded on family acceptance, fulfilling the family expectations. Your feelings of self-worth are based on your family's reputation. This can be a huge thing for moms. They gotta look good. They gotta look like the perfect family. They gotta look like they got it all together, and their kids have to look great, and their kids have to look perfect. And we derive a lot of our self-worth on how our family looks, how our kids look, because we think that that's what defines us as a good mom or as a good human. So work-centered, you define yourself by your occupation. So I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, that's who you are. And that's kind of all you are, right? And your self-worth is derived from your job. So what happens when you lose your job? Or what happens if nobody cares? Obviously, you don't matter. No. Possession-centered, so the things that you have. So this is similar to money-centered, but it's possession-centered. So what do you have? Is your car nice? Is your house nice? Do you have nice furniture? Do you define yourself on how nice those things are? I will tell you, I'm like thinking about people that I know who are centered in these things and who I see are kind of deprived of joy because those things define them.
I was reading something the other day. The top 10 list of vehicles that millionaires drive. Guess which vehicles were not in that?
Ferraris. Maseratis.
Yeah.
Porsches.
Mercedes. BMW. One of the vehicles in there that would surprise people is Hyundai. One of the vehicles that millionaires drive. And that's a good car, actually. But, you know, you don't think of a Hyundai as a car a millionaire would drive. You'd think of the cars you would say are a Bentley or a Rolls Royce. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. If we're not in that place, what we perceive about people that are.
Yeah, it just kind of goes to show that, you know, like maybe they are not placing their worth on the things that they own. They know their self-worth, which may be why they're successful.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with two old millionaires. I don't mean age-wise versus new. A new millionaire will tend to go for the flash and let me show you what I have and this. An old millionaire, 10, that doesn't mean all of them. An older millionaire that is okay with their money. In other words, they're not kind of gotten over defining themselves by their money. May have a Bentley or a Rolls or whatever, but their purpose in it is not to impress, just they like the car. You know, it'd be nice to be in a position where I don't have a Bentley because I don't want one rather than I can't buy one. They're at a place of choice. And so, yeah, they could buy a Bentley, but no, I don't want one. It's just a car.
When you were speaking about that, I thought when you said new millionaires, I was thinking like younger millionaires, but you were thinking of like someone who is new to having a lot of money. Is a little bit more excited about showing off the fact that they have a little bit of money or they have more money. So,
yeah. And you look at a lottery winner and what you've done is taken somebody with a mindset that doesn't have a millionaire mindset. And most of the time in 5 years, they're broke. That's because they go out and spend. And I'm not saying it's all for flash, but they spend because they can. But the reason they're not really millionaires is because their mindset says, I am poor or I am middle class. So something's going to equal out there. Either their mindset's going to shift and maybe they don't spend so much. Maybe they become somebody that makes their money work for them more.
Yeah. So this one I think was the one I was saying before. It's pleasure centered. So you only feel secure when you're on a pleasure high. So this could be a lot of drug addictions, or even just thrill addictions, like I was saying, like you literally just have to seek out something to feel alive because nothing else makes you feel alive unless there's an adrenaline or chemicals or whatever it is causing you to be centered. And he says here in the Security, Guidance, Wisdom, and Power, your power is almost negligible when you're pleasure-centered. You're giving your power to something else. Another one is friend-centered. And I feel like a lot of teenagers fall into this. I was one of them. You center yourself on your friends and what your friends think of you and how many friends you have and things like that. And the power in that is you're limited by your social comfort zone. And your actions are as fickle as their opinions, because that's where you derive a lot of your center, right? Enemy centered. Okay, this is a concept. So enemy centered. How would you be enemy centered? Oh, well, you've found someone that bothers you so much that they dominate your life. He gives a story about somebody who they were partners at one time, the partner betrayed them, and now that person made his life miserable. It's all that person's fault and it's all they talk about. It's all they focus on. And they realized that they were enemy centered, that they were giving all of their power, all of their joy, all of their peace to somebody that wronged them, to somebody that they considered was their enemy, which is crazy to me that you would think that your self-worth, your almost your essence and your definition of yourself comes from somebody that you hate. I think about the world right now and people right now and how they define themselves on the opposite of whatever they don't like, or, you know, they define themselves on, well, I hate that person, or I hate the way you say that, or I hate the way that makes me feel. So I'm defining myself as the opposite of that. And I'm trying to prove myself as something like the opposite of the person that you hate.
Yeah. Well, it gives them a sense of purpose.
But they're deriving it from someone else.
Right. It's a purpose of I'm going to destroy this person. That's my purpose. So any desires they would have for their own joy and fulfillment go out the window because I'm going to destroy that person and I'm going to let everybody know it. So, okay, let's get real. We say these things. This sounds odd. But everybody I know in some way does it or has done it, including myself.
Right. And I think we're all of these at some point in our life.
Or have been, you know, I mean, I'm not going to ever say I've overcome it because you never know. Something may come along and blindside me and off I go on my victim story. Even though I consciously know and at some level know that that is a powerless position to be in. And when I'm there, I'm destroying. Victims don't build, they destroy. And so I'm doing it by maybe if I can blame that person for my life, I can feel better about myself. But there's never enough I can do to destroy them or blame them to feel better about myself from that. So that's why victims find other things to be victims about. In fact, they'll find things that don't even apply to them. You ever had somebody come over and tell you what a neighbor did to them and you like the neighbor, but now you're incensed because I can't believe they did that. And now
I've had friends leave my friendship because I'm associated with somebody that they dislike.
Yeah, because now their victim story becomes my victim story. And then I go tell somebody that, and so then I get somebody else to be part of that. And now look at the validation we have. And then we may go to the person, like there's 10 of us now, and say, we have an issue with you.
Can I tell you this story? And hopefully I'm being sensitive to it. So my kids went to a Montessori school in South Carolina, and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful school. They had wonderful teachers, and the families were wonderful, and I made wonderful friends with the families and the moms there. And there started to be a problem with the owner, and the teacher was having a really hard time with the owner. She was having a hard time wanting to stay at this school, and I loved that school. It was the best thing for my kids. And so, I mean, like we were talking as moms, our concern about this teacher potentially not being around because she wanted to leave the school. And I remember the owner of the school called us moms Montessori Mafia moms because what we were doing, and I think it was all of us. We were talking to each other about our problems and about our issues that we had with the school and about our issues that we had with whatever and our concerns, but we weren't addressing them with the person. And I did address it with the person. Because I don't like doing that. I feel like if I have a problem with you, I typically try to address it. Maybe it takes me a minute to be ready to address it, but I do try to address it. Some people don't like that. In fact, I've had a lot of people kind of stop talking to me because I've addressed things and they're like, I don't know what to do about this. Communication problems.
She's being honest with me.
Yes. Yeah. Communication problems. So anyways, so I spoke with the owner and I was like, hey, these are our concerns. This is what we're worried about. You know, and we love this school. We want to support you. We want to be there for you. And that's kind of how things went. And then things kind of exploded. And the teacher left. And all of us Mafia Montessori moms got together, boosted the teacher, and they started a new school. That's the end of the story. It's a beautiful school.
Why do people buy into those stories?
Which one?
Well, like you all get together. You have your things. But you listen to another person and they have their things and then we buy into it. Why do we do that?
I think for validation, but like same boat therapy. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah, sure. But it goes back to self-worth. I don't feel that I have the worth enough to go to the person because they might show me a side of it I don't want to see or I don't know. So I'll go to people that will tell me I'm right. And then I can feel better about myself. And then maybe we do all gang up on that person and go, see, we all agree. We're right, you're wrong. And usually that creates lose-lose overall. But yeah, we feel better. Yeah, they closed the school or we started our own school because they were bad, sick and wrong. And you love the school. But it was self-defeating because just laying it out there, you actually love the school And then, you know, you become part of this, what they call the mafia. It you know, it's easy to do if we go unconscious, but it all is a way of validating our self-worth. We're better than them. So even though we don't feel worthy, at least we're better than that person. And people do this. We do this all the time. That's a form of, it's an artificial form of self-worth because it's not real. And here's the thing. We don't want them to actually change, because if they change, then who can I complain about? Who can I be better than?
Oh my gosh. This is so, so true. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm just like memory lane. Okay. The teacher ended up leaving the school for her mental and emotional well-being. So this is a good thing that she left, but the families left with her because they loved. So I think I loved her and I loved the Montessori. And so then she and the other teacher that was there, which we also love, went and made their own school. And we were able to get kind of like the best of both worlds. But it was just kind of interesting and funny how what happened initially was, you know, all of these parents are getting together talking, oh, you know, like, are you concerned about this? Or did you hear about this? Or, you know, and I love those families. So if they're listening, know that I love you and I don't judge you. I love you. I don't judge you. I'm with you. I'm with
you. It's a lesson. It's a,
right.
It's a lesson, you know, something to learn from. Because when I've been involved in trainings, I've had issues with some of the people I worked with. So I'd go off and start something and there'd be people that would come over and support me. Well, what they were really doing is saying, I'm going to support you because I don't like them. And so they were basically in a space of not in their true self, but in the space of complainers. I thought, hey, this is really good. I got all this support. Well, guess what? 3 months later, who are they complaining about? They just turned it on me. They tend to take the complaining to, complainers do what complainers do.
And here's the thing. It's contagious. I think it's contagious. I think when somebody's complaining to you, you want to relate to people. And we're seeking connection and relatability. And when somebody's in that mindset of just complaining, well, you want to get sucked in because you want to connect with them. You want to relate to them. I think, and then intentionally or not intentionally, but then we take a step back and we're like I've done this several times, especially now with my new awareness that I feel like I have. I've taken a step back and been like, wow, I'm really disappointed in myself. I think that I, you know, like I shouldn't have been talking about that person behind their back, or I should have been more open and accepting at this time. I was complaining and I got sucked in to somebody else complaining. And so I started going off of it with them rather than being like, no, I don't want to be a part of that. But we do it. We all do it.
Well, I call it, we get blindsided and, you know, we don't see it come and then it's there and it's like we are in it. And we do, yeah.
All of a sudden we have this bubble. You're like, oh yeah, I am upset about that. You're right. Yeah, something like that happened to me a little while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why we have this little compass inside of us that tells us when we get off kilter. And we can feel it, but we ignore it because we're having a good time. Oh, this is so fun.
We're connecting.
Yes, we're connecting and relating and we're trying to solve a problem because the issue's over here, but we're going to talk to each other who neither one of us can solve the problem.
But we're going to talk about it anyways.
And I don't want to, it's not human nature because I believe the human being, the true spirit of ourselves wouldn't do that. But it's part of what we've learned in society when you go back to the concept of self-worth. We all want to know we matter. But you look at the war in the world, you look at the division in our country, you look at the campaigns. It's all basically appealing to the part of people that feels they don't matter. And I don't care who the candidate is. I'm saying it sells. It's victimhood sells. You know, your life sucks because of this person and your life sucks because of this person. You know, and there was a president, President Reagan would say, is your life any better today than it was 4 years ago? But you know what? That's not real because if my life is better, I shouldn't make it depend on the president because that gives power to an entity outside of myself. The powerful person will thrive in spite of or whatever is going on. Like people say, well, a recession, if you lost your business, it was because of the recession. No, it was because I made some business decisions that didn't work. I mean, that's what it comes down to. People, there are people that thrive during a recession. They adjust, they adapt. They're like the Marines, improvise, adapt, and overcome. I was never a Marine, but I like that saying. But we do that because we think that makes, well, at least we don't look so bad. You know, it's the recession or the president or whatever. And, you know, those things do affect the world, whoever the president is in Congress. But every day, we're not thinking about who the president is. We're thinking about what can we do to make our life work. And we don't say, well, I can't because the president's Biden or the president's Trump. We don't do that. But if it doesn't work out, well, it's Biden's fault or it's Trump's fault.
It's the victim mindset.
Absolutely.
I don't have power over my own life. Everything is happening to me, right?
Right.
Like, life is only good if there's a good president. Life is only good if I have money. Life is only good if...
Right. So like you look at your husband, I mean, they're creating this enterprise that everything I see is thriving. And there's people saying the economy sucks. Well, maybe the economy does suck, but they're doing it anyway. You know, it's like good for them. You know, it's not like, well, we can't do it till we get a new president, or, you know, if they didn't like the other president, we can't do it until another president comes in. We give away so much power to entities outside of ourselves. Then we wonder, why do we not feel value or worthy within ourselves? Because the scenarios you mentioned about doctors and lawyers, I've had many come through my training. And once we get past the vagary of how's life, oh, it's pretty good. Okay, describe it. Then they're like, I'm miserable. Why? I'm a doctor, but I don't want to be a doctor. You know, everybody would look at them and say, why? You got it made, man. You make a lot of money and you're prestigious. And a lot of them said, I only became a doctor because my father wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or whatever it was. And they never really felt permission to follow their own heart. And that's where self-worth really comes from. We can't prove our self-worth, not to ourselves nor to anybody. It's already there. It's already there. You already are. It's like a dog. Do you guys have a dog?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, a dog does what it does. It doesn't think, I'm a dog, so this is what I should do. It just does. It just is a dog. No matter what, you can call it whatever you want, but it's a dog. And so if you come in and it's happy to see you, that's not thinking I should be happy because Alyssa's home, or, you know, it's the right thing to do. It's just happy and it loves you. A dog is the epitome of unconditional love, but it's not thinking I'm a dog, so this is what I got to do. Well, we were born worthy, and then we got screwed up because life starts sending us different messages. Well, you must do this, or you must do this, or you must do this. So Deepak Chopra, Eckhart Tolle's guy now, he wrote the book, The Power of Now and the New Earth. Deepak Chopra, he's done a lot of lectures and written books, but one of the things that I first heard was from him, and it said, people do things backwards. We think, if I do this, I'll have this, and then I'll be somebody. People will look at me and say, oh, wow, you're really somebody because you are a doctor, you are a lawyer, you are a public speaker, and you have these things, you live on the big house, and now you are somebody. But he says, you know, we do it backwards because we have all those things, but they're external, and we don't feel like we're somebody. So we have to do more, we have to get more, we have to prove more that I'm somebody. And he says, you know, the real formula is just be. And people ask, how do you be? Well, if you're asking how to be, then you're not being. You just be. Just be. And then you will naturally do what brings you joy, and you'll have everything you want. But that's hard for our ego minds to grasp because it wants to know how. Well, think of the dog. A dog is just a dog. It doesn't think about it, but they're happy. Not because of anything, but they're happy. They're happy to see you. They wag their tail. And it's not about the time or what the weather's like outside or anything like that. It's just they're happy. And, you know, if we could be that way, well, we can. We just don't because we think we have to have a formula for it. And there isn't one. You just be.
Right. There were two more other centers before he got to the one that we should be basing our worth on. There's one that's church-centered. Now, we are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I will say, I'll be the first one to say there is a cultural aspect to it. When I was...
You're not the first one to say that.
I'll admit it. There's a cultural aspect to it. And when I was growing up, I feel like it was... I don't know if it was worth... It's about the same. It was pretty bad when I was growing up. And there was this idea that it's similar to family-centered, but it was like you had to show people who you were. You had to show people that you were a member of the church. You had to prove to them that you were a church-going girl or that you were a good girl. And the only way that you felt like you mattered was if you went to church. The only way that you felt like you were good was if you went to church. And that's how people treated you. That's how people saw you. And that's how you saw yourself. And that was growing up. And I think I see it even now in people of, you know, well, if you don't go to church, then I can't be friends with you. I can't talk to you. You're not good enough for me. There's that sense. So there's that self-centered that, okay, when we are these things, when we're centering our worth on these external things, we tend to center other people's worth on these external things as well. As well, if you don't have all that money, then you're not worth talking to. If you don't have a lot of friends, I can't talk to you. If you don't go to church, we're not friends. I can't talk to you. You're not worth it to me. So I just thought that was something I wanted to throw out there. And then I think we touched on this one, the self-centered. This I wanted to expand on a little bit because I feel like this is very prevalent in the world right now, is being self-centered. Your guidance for your, if you are self-centered, is if it feels good, what do I want? What do I need? What's my truth? That's such a big thing, is like, what's my truth? What's in it for me? What's going to benefit me? Those things are being self-centered when you're making your actions based on what's in it for you. How do you feel about that? How do you want to approach this? And I feel like this happens to us pretty regularly when we're trying to justify some of our actions of, well, it just feels right to me. It may not be right to you, but it's right to me. And this is just who I am. And this is, you know, you just have to accept me as I am. And that vibe of just like, everything is about me and you have to conform to me because I'm special, but I'm just like everybody else.
Yes. If you ask the person that says, you know, accept me for who I am, ask them, who are you? They don't have an answer. They'll talk about the external things. I'm a fun-loving, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, that's not who you are. That's what you do. That's how you show up. Because I've asked people, well, who are you? I'm this. That's what you do. Who are you? Well, I'm a doctor. That's a title. Who are you? People don't really know. They identify themselves by external things. Yeah, the whole my truth, your truth. You know, there may be some things that work for you that don't work for somebody else. Like for your husband, Remington, being in the Navy, it worked for him. Doesn't mean that's a truth. It just means it worked for him. So when people are saying, you know, when you say my truth, what you're really saying, and now people may balk at this, is you're closed-minded. Don't you even tell me anything because this is my truth, and how dare you attack my truth? And it comes in the space of being like open-minded. So if somebody says, well, have you ever done this? No, why not? It you know, it doesn't work for me. Well, you got to keep an open mind. Well, maybe I am. And maybe in the open-mindedness and feeling in my little heart here, yeah, I'm open to it. And no, it doesn't work for me. It's not something I want to do. Let's go out and do LSD just to experience it. No, I can be open to it. In fact, if I, you know, being open to it, then you can discern, is this something that's going to be conducive to where I want to go in life and what I want to do? Yes or no. But see, a lot of people construe openness as anything goes and we'll do anything. No, that's not being open. That's being programmed. I'm open, therefore, I never say no. Well, then you can't be in the moment when something comes up and really discern for yourself because you're programmed. I got to say yes. The thrill seeker. They see something, I got to go do that. And maybe inside they're going, I don't really want to do that, but I got to prove I'm a thrill seeker because that's my identity. So, you know, all of this comes back to, we're looking to fill up a void that's on the inside of us with external things. It can happen. That's why an alcoholic drinks, they fill a void inside of them. And that void is typically tied to, I don't feel like I matter. The same thing with, you know, people that on different sides of the political equation, or war, all that stuff that's going on over in the Middle East right now. And we may be going there ourselves as a country. It's because people feel like they don't matter. And why don't they matter? Because they don't talk with one another. And I'm right, you're wrong, and all that stuff. So that if we all felt self-worth, there would be no war. We would disagree, but there wouldn't be war. If we all felt self-worth, we could honor people in the space they're in without judging them and trusting that they'll learn the lessons they are here to learn, takes them down this path. I mean, even with church, you know, there's people, I used to think that if somebody wasn't of my faith, too bad for them. I don't feel that way anymore. Who am I to say the path they take to get to God is less than mine, or not as productive as mine, or whatever you want to say. But it all comes back to that self-worth. I want to feel like I matter. I want to feel love. I want to know that I am valuable. And we kind of have a dumbing down in society where value takes a back seat to entitlement. I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to this. And I say, why? Why are you entitled to that? You're guaranteed you can breathe, and that's about it. You know, the rest you got to create.
So there were two things I wanted to touch on. So his center that he says that we should base ourselves on is principle centered, but I have an issue with that, and I'll just say it. I have an issue with that because when you are principle-centered, sometimes you begin to be performance-centered, or you base your self-worth on your performance according to those principles, which I don't think is right. I think we need to understand that our worth, and you said this earlier, our value is given. We have infinite value and infinite potential because we were created by the infinite. Whether you believe in God, whether you believe in the Tao, whether you believe in Buddha or the universe, there is something inside there that you believe that you are connected to something spiritual, something outside of this existence, right? And my belief is that we are infinite beings. There are transition periods, but we are infinite beings, and we have infinite value and infinite worth. And when we feel that our value is given because we exist, and this was a concept that was really hard for me to understand. It was hard for me to, let me rephrase that. It wasn't hard for me to understand. It was hard for me to feel. It was hard for me to internalize the idea that I matter just because I was created. But that is so essential for people to understand that you breathe, you feel, you exist, you matter. You matter. Your worth is a given. And there was a podcast that I was listening to several months ago where they were talking about love. Specifically, it was Christ and God's love, but I feel like it's very similar to value. Love is a given, and it's a given for you to choose to accept. And our value is a given, and it's not something that you can earn. And this is something that I think everybody gets caught up in, is even with this principle-centered thing, it's like, well, I have to earn my value. If I'm not following these principles, I'm not worth it. And this is how I've been leading my life for the like maybe eight years. It was like shortly after we got married that I read this book, and I was like, well, obviously I suck because I'm not following any of these principles. Now I realize, no, I matter because I exist, because I breathe, because I live. I matter. I have value. And it turns out that, holy cow, because I matter, because I'm connected to an infinite being, an infinite universe, I have infinite potential. So when you can grasp the concept of you have infinite worth, you can grasp the concept of you have infinite potential. You are a creator. You are not just made to exist, to breathe, but you are made to create. And you can create an infinite amount of possibilities within the laws of God or physics or whatever you want to call it. But I feel like, wow, how many of us, how often are we caught up in our principle-based? I think Remington for a long time was principle-based worthiness. Of he was only worthy if he got so much stuff done. And if he could show people like how productive he is and how much he checked his boxes and, you know, performance-based worth. It's like, well, I got a lot of stuff done. My house is clean. My kids are good. I have all of these achievements, so I'm obviously worth something. We matter because we're here. And I really want to drive that home to our listeners is you matter because you breathe. You matter because you were given life. You matter because you exist. It's the Rene Descartes. I think, therefore I am. Anyways, everybody knows. I think, therefore I am.
With that, our purpose here to me is to know that, not just in theory, but to know it, to discover, to uncover an awareness of who we are, to remember, to reattach ourselves to the worthiness that we are. That's why we're here. And we'll do things with that, but we don't have to create it. It's already there. We just get to discover or uncover it and to remember it, reattach ourselves to ourselves. And that's it. And the other thing is we can tell people that they matter. If they don't believe it, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'd have people like in the training, there are 4-day trainings and somebody stands up and I feel like trash and you know, I get somebody else saying, you're not trash. And I'm like, you know what? That's all well and good, but they don't believe it. We could stand around this person for 4 days with pom-poms on and say, you matter, you matter, you matter. And that's all well and good until we all have to go home and they go home with the same thing they got right now. They don't believe they matter. So until they know it, you know, we say you matter. So we feel better about ourselves a lot. Look at me, you know, I'm telling them they matter. But until they get it, and it's when we can inspire people to themselves get it, you know, that's when we're making the greatest difference. So going back to this principle-based, are principles like honesty, is that what you're meaning by principles, honesty, trust? See, what happens with those things? Okay, I'm going to be an honest person. So then we start writing rules for that. This is what it looks like. So we box ourselves in. So in any given moment of anything, when we come up to a situation, we have our rules about what an honest person would do or what about a giving person would do. And in that moment, we shut off any inspiration because we've already decided what's good for us. And, you know, this is in the idea of our worthiness, it is a connection between us and a higher power. We're one, but we shut that off because I've already decided, I've already made a rule about what an honest person does or what a giving person does. And so we are not allowing ourselves to receive the inspiration that might say, in this case, do this, or in this case, do this. Nope, I've got my rule, I've got my rules. And that's what you were talking about with, well, a lot of people, not just Remington, trust me. So, you know, in that worthiness, it's discovering it through our life experiences. So when you say I should do this or should do that, that's a rule. There's no rule what you should do. This is what I did. Okay, it did not work. What am I learning about myself in that process rather than I should have done this? Because when you should on yourself, you take out all inspiration.
I had a therapist always tell me, stop shooting yourself. Okay, just stop shooting yourself because shooting yourself, you shouldn't do anything. You should just be. Just do. You are.
Yeah, you should. Exactly. Just be. Should is the domain of the ego. It shoulds on you all the time. And that ties into guilt, which really doesn't cause much of a change because with guilt, we're beating ourselves up. And we use that too. Look at me. At least I feel guilty. That doesn't change anything? What's going to be different? That's, we don't know. We don't actually know, but it's the change of heart that really will create the change. And in that, we don't know what it means to be anything in any given moment. I can't predict tomorrow. I can only be right now or not be. It was Shakespeare that did the to be or not to be. That is the question.
Okay, so we've talked about self-worth and how, of course, we can't give you that. We can't give that knowledge to you, that understanding to you. We can say it, like Michael said, we could say it, we could pound it over your head over and over and over again that you matter and that you have infinite worth and you have infinite potential and you just have to accept it. But until you understand it, until you feel it, there's not a lot that we can do, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't continue to inspire, that we can't continue to try and say it in a way that speaks to you, try and help you get to that journey and get to that connection that, oh yeah, you're right. I am worthy. I am, you know, all of these things. So that's what we're here to do. We're here to do our best to help lead and guide you to that understanding. But I wanted to touch on something my mindset coach always talks about is your essence, which is your infinite value, your infinite worth, your infinite potential. He calls it your essence. And he talks about guiding your life based on your essence, on more of who you are. And we've talked about kind of uncovering that and discovering that as you go on through life, as we continue to peel back those layers. But there's this, when you're focused on your essence, on who you truly are and your infinite value and infinite potential, you can begin to see a vision of your greater purpose here in this life and your greater calling in this life. And as you hold tight to your essence, to your spirit, to whatever it is that your spirit is calling to, and you work towards that greater purpose and that calling that you feel like you have from your essence, I feel like you create more fulfillment and more joy and more energy, more of everything, because you're reaching towards this beautiful vision of who you want to be, who you see yourself as, because you're holding on to that essence. And this is something that I've had to really work on recently with this podcast, because this podcast has been a challenge for me. Because I get really caught up in the editing portion. I spend hours editing this podcast, and sometimes I get tired, and sometimes I just don't feel that the motivation and the rightness like I do when we are recording. When we are recording, I'm like, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to bring this light and this joy to whoever may be listening. This is right. It's the mechanics of fulfilling whatever it is you're seeking to fulfill. And I get caught up in the mechanics. And he was just like, but what you need to do is you need to go back to your essence. You need to go back to your spirit. You need to go back to your greater purpose and think about what he calls your ocean vision, your ocean goal. And the ocean goal for me is to be a light to people. And I've shared that on another episode, but that's my ocean goal, my ocean vision, my bigger picture in this entire world, in this life, is I want to be a light, and I'm going to follow the path that allows me to do that in whatever avenue may happen, right? And he's like, when you're focused on that, then when you're doing the mechanics, you remember, like, I'm being a light. I'm being a light, and this is what I'm doing this for. And I feel like when we can feel our self-worth, and we really get down to our essence of what our spirit is calling to us, what our spirit is saying to us, that's when we break open the beautiful possibility of fulfillment and peace and joy and all of those wonderful things that we're all seeking. It's us trying to be more authentic, more of our true selves, of our spirit, our core.
That's why I'm here, because I could feel that in you, that this was part of a purpose. And I love doing this work. I'm actually talking to some people, not only starting up coaching again, but maybe even training. you know, these are things that are down the road, but all this has rekindled in me a passion I've had for this kind of work. And so it's, for what it's worth, it is very fulfilling for me, because I feel like I have an avenue to, well, first of all, it's inspiring, but it's also an avenue of being a difference in the world. Not making a difference, being a difference in the world. By the way, as far as your worth, you don't have to create it because it's already created. We get to reconnect with it and remember it. And it's a process of remembering and uncovering what already is, like you already are. So,
hey, I appreciate you being here, because I wouldn't be able to talk and have as many insights as you do. So I appreciate having somebody to talk to and to fulfill this calling that I feel like we both had. We both came together on this with this sense of purpose and this sense that we wanted to do more and, like you said, be a difference in somebody's life. Really, if we are lighting somebody else's life, that is being a difference. And that's what keeps me going when I'm in the thick of editing. It's because editing is new to me. So I'm trying to figure it out. And that's why it's so grueling right now. But I know that I'll get it and that it'll start to be easier. And then it's going to be like as simple as, this is just so easy. This is just natural. And it's going through that transition. I spoke about this on one of our previous podcasts of the slide. Of like, you know, this is where I want to be, is up here, but I got to go down first and go through the struggle and realize, oh my gosh, there's so much that I didn't know about running a podcast. And then I got to hang on and just do my best and learn and grow. And then I'll get back up there and I'll get to where I want to go. So I'm just kind of like in that lower of like knowing that I don't know a lot and learning what I need to know. And then I'll get to the point where I know what I need to know.
Well, you know, there's two kinds of I don't know. One is a denial. You know, what's going on in your life? I don't know. Yeah, you do. There's another kind, which is a very inspiring, because I don't know what I don't know, so I'm open to learn. And those are two very different types of I don't know. One, the energy of it is the key. You know, the energy of I don't know about my life is denial. I don't want to see it. I don't think I'm powerful enough to handle it. This kind of I don't know opens doors, especially if you have a vision. And that's what's going to push you through the challenging times, because you have this vision of being a light and an inspiration. Yeah. And I tell you what, sometimes you may feel like, I don't know if I can do this, or I never want to go through this again. And life has a way of saying, you won't. Next one's going to be a bigger challenge.
That's the beautiful thing, though, because I keep thinking like, oh, I get to a point where I feel confident in where I want to be and who I am. And then I feel like, oh, what am I going to do when I'm to the point where this is easy? And then the beautiful thing about life is that you're given another challenge. You're given something else, because we're constantly growing, or at least we're given opportunities to grow. It's kind of our choice whether we're going to or not. We can sit there and do nothing.
Do you know why you're given another challenge?
Because I accept the one that's given to me.
Because you ask for it.
Because I ask for it.
You don't even know you're asking for it. You want to find out you're inspiring? Well, let's see. Take this one on. How much do you desire this? And it's all good.
That's all the time that we have for today. But thank you for joining us on You Already Are. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and hit the subscribe button and share it with your friends and family. Maybe share it with someone who you think needs to be reminded of their worthiness and their infinite value and potential. Follow us on social media, on Instagram and Facebook, and shout out to us. Send us some comments. We'd love to hear some feedback, what you guys want to talk about, what you guys want to hear, what you like, what you don't like. It helps our content and it helps us grow. So we hope to catch you next time on You Already Are. Thank you for joining us on another episode of You Already Are. Remember, you already are everything you aspire to be. Continue this journey and embrace the beauty it brings. Create the life you desire and remember your infinite worth and infinite potential. Until next time, live as though you already are.